From downtown Milwaukee, welcome to Money Talk with Bob Landis. Each week, professional advisors from Landis & Company Investments discuss the latest financial developments, offering timely insight and long-term perspective.
This is Money Talk for Friday, the 5th of May. Before we start, I should remind you that May is Mental Health Month. Not a minute too soon. All right, checking the calendar this weekend, Brewers are in San Francisco. Next week, they're at AmFam with the Royals and the Dodgers. And it's Cinco de Mayo, and it's National No Pants Day. You can celebrate both days at once. Drink enough margaritas and your pants will fall off. Sounds like the infield at tomorrow's Kentucky Derby. Let's start with something a little different. In Brazil, a professor started a book club for prison inmates. It turns out the prisoners read 9 times more books than civilians. Well, they do have the time. The inmates are also publishing book reviews just like Oprah. I'm not sure what books they're reading, but I'll bet they're not romance novels. If you're feeling left behind by technology, this isn't going to make you feel any better. Researchers at Northeastern University have taught parrots how to use video phones. The birds make calls and to other parrots. So it's two parrots talking to each other on a video phone. I think they're planning a jailbreak. This sounds like something new from the Twilight Zone. Last week we heard about a methane gas explosion that killed 18,000 cows in Texas. Following that, 6 cattle were found dead in another Texas ranch with their tongues missing. There was no evidence of a struggle, no footprints, no tire tracks where the animals were found, and the grass around the carcasses was undisturbed. Someone call Rod Serling, tell him ET is back. And finally, who of us haven't had a fake ID? I mean, really, who hasn't? Well, a drunken British driver has taken the fake ID to a whole new level. He was stopped. He handed over his driver's license, and that's when the fun began. The name and the photo on the license was Boris Johnson, the former Prime Minister of England. As if the cops needed more proof, it had a renewal date of the year 3000. Apparently planned to be driving drunk for the next 977 years. On the podcast today, we have Tom Papenfuss, Kendall Bauer, Joel Driesing, and wrapping up the week, here's Kyle Tedding.
Well, thanks, Max. Bit of mixed results for the week. The NASDAQ up 0.1%, closing at 12,235. The S&P 500 down 0.8%, down 33 points, closing at the bell at 41.36. And the Dow Jones Industrial Average down 1.2%, closing at 33.64 for the year. The Dow still up 2.2%. The S&P up a much more attractive 8.3%, and the NASDAQ a stellar 17.2%, all including dividends there. You know, I think worth pointing out that it was a pretty rough week overall, with Friday kind of coming through for us, Joel, on the heels of a jobs report that was, I think, surprising to a lot in terms of its strength. And of course, we don't put a ton of stock in a month. We don't put a ton of stock in, you know, developing a trend on just short-term data, but encouraging to see that the labor market remains far, far stronger than what I think people thought coming into this morning.
Yeah, Kyle, especially with the interest rates going up and what the Fed's been trying to do to slow the economy, a lot of people were expecting the jobs numbers to come in lower today, and they actually came in the highest in 3 months. So it kind of put a kibosh on people's expectations that things were cooling off in the economy. And as far as the labor market's going, I mean, there are a lot of signs that it's still going pretty strong. The gains were broad. The leisure and hospitality industry is almost within 2% of where it was in February of 2020. So they've been crawling back, but there's still hiring going on in at restaurants and bars. The gains were, as I said, broad. The unemployment rate, which is another measure of how the labor economy is doing, got to the lowest level, 3.4%, than it's been since May of 1969. So that was real promising. Along with that, black unemployment is at the lowest rate it's ever been. It was at 4.7%. So the gap between the white and black unemployment was the smallest it's ever been. The participation rate in the prime working age workers between 25 and 54 years old, that's the highest it's been since 2008. So there were a lot of positive things to point out, but there were a couple of, you know, we were just talking before the show, it's never all one or the other. Everything's always mixed. And there were a couple of signs in there that, you know, we had numbers earlier this week of job postings in March, and those were down for the third month in a row. It showed that layoffs were the highest that they've been since the end of 2020. And there were some numbers today, and you and I talked about this, and it's not real clear what it says yet, but usually the hiring of temporary employees is a harbinger of which way the economy is going as far as hiring is concerned. And that's been down. It's been down for 3 months in a row, 5 months in a row, year-to-year basis. That's been going down. So that might be a sign that things are going to be cooling off.
And, of course, the Fed met earlier in the week. We got an announcement on Wednesday of a quarter-point rate increase. And I think, to many, a report like we got Friday morning on labor was something that could have taken markets down, because investors are looking at that report and going, well, the Fed now has more cover to raise rates farther. They're not concerned about labor. Remember the Fed's kind of dual mandate of full employment. Well, check that box, maybe beyond full employment. And the other box is price stability. We haven't checked that box yet. And so let's raise rates a little more. And yet, you know, investors really, I think, piled on the plus side this morning, despite what could have been good news is bad for investors. Of course, Tom, Joel mentioned, you know, a little bit of good, a little bit of bad. There's some reasons why investors maybe want to be a little bit more cautious on the stock side of the market. We look at earnings. We look at kind of prices right now. You know, some things out there that perhaps, you know, you're paying attention to that might be a sign that, you know, we don't just want to count on every week being an up week.
Yeah, I think, you know, something that I talk about with my clients right now is just, you know, we always kind of use this term cautious optimism. And, you know, one of the things that leaves me to not be, you know, with some of these positive numbers, especially the way we finish this week, is just looking at valuations. Right now, the PE on the S&P 500 is right around 18 or so, 18 times future earnings. And, you know, compare that to about the 10-year average, right around 17. And I kind of also highlight that, you know, I think the longer-term average beyond the last 10 years for the S&P is somewhere historically maybe around 16 times earnings. You know, these are, it means you're paying a premium for this, for a stock right now in this kind of environment. And just kind of ask yourself, you look around, is this an environment that you feel confident that you're willing to pay a higher price for a company, given everything that we know and everything that we see in front of us? And that might lead you to some caution. You also kind of look at, when you look at the nature of the returns we're seeing year to date, you know, the S&P 500 returns, about 60% of all the returns we've seen are coming from just five companies. The usual names we've talked about before, Apple, Microsoft, NVIDIA, Meta, and Amazon. So it just tells you that there's not a lot of market breadth, not a lot of market participants, which usually is a signal, an indicator for sustainability of performance going forward. So it's just, you know, another kind of thing that I just tell people that, you know, we always need to be cautious and don't follow just those names. Spread the money out across different equities. You know, stick to those balances that, you know, when we're have such a narrow margin for where these returns are coming from, that it can quickly go the other way.
And I think it's a reminder that what we did 6 months ago isn't what we're going to do today, because the environment changes. And so it doesn't mean that we abandon, you know, the old approach, but it does mean that the approach changes over time. And Kendall, we're seeing that with a number of pension funds making some announcements that they're maybe a little less willing to invest in stocks than they used to be. This isn't the first time they've mentioned that. Historically, though, it was, hey, we're going to take stocks out of the portfolio to a certain extent, you know, maybe a couple of percentage points here or there. But we're going to put that money into some alternative asset class, private equity, real estate. You know, the big one that the the pension programs were fond of for a little while was timberland and this ability to have forests that you could rely on as a stream of income. Well, it seems like the math has changed again, and now some of these pension plans are looking at a different place. And of course, I think it's a conversation that I know you've been having, I've been having, Tom, you've been having with clients. You know, what are these pension programs and what should we be looking at different if we are going to talk about, okay, what's the stock allocation supposed to be over the next 10, not the last 10?
Yeah, I think it's interesting to extrapolate, not necessarily, you know, where they pull money, if they're going to move away from stocks and shift into private equity or other alternative investments that maybe many of our clients aren't going to utilize, but more about their change in objective moving forward. I think you look at the last 10 years being in an ultra-low interest rate environment and stocks massively outperformed their historical returns, you know, almost double on the S&P, somewhere in the range of 13 to 15%, where historically it's a little bit closer to 8 to 10%. What I talk to clients about is when we look at the next 5 to 10 years, do we think when we do get to rate cuts by the Fed that we're going to go back down to an ultra low interest rate environment? Or maybe do we end up somewhere in between where the current overnight rate is and where it was for the last decade? If we end up in between, well, I think that bodes well for expected bond returns over the next 3, 5, 10 years, meaning if we know a 60-40 portfolio, 60% stocks, 40% bonds, historically has been able to hit a return annually of 6 to 8%, let's call it. The last 10 years, stocks chipping in 10 to 12, bonds kind of hanging with inflation at 1 to 2, still gets you kind of to the high end range of that. Well, if we end up in a higher rate environment and now stocks maybe come down towards historical norms, maybe 7-8% annually, but now bonds come in at 3-5%, well, you can still get to, you know, get towards that 6-8 annualized return target. Just a different allocation that gets you there.
And what I appreciate about, you know, what the pension programs are talking about this week, what we candidly have been talking about for a few months at least now, is that this isn't strictly a conversation on return. You know, returns are a function of the risk you're willing to take to an extent, but also we can take less risk now and get to a similar level of return because bonds generally just don't have the same kind of volatility that stocks have. And so I think, you know, that's the key is I always view risk first. I always want to make sure that I've got the risk part of the equation right. The returns will come. You give it enough time, you stay true to plan, and the returns are a function of that risk. But if we can take a little less risk and get to a similar return level, I'm going to be pretty excited about that. So I think that's the absolute right way to be thinking about this. It fits in, Tom, with kind of your reminder that while there's optimism about stocks, we do have to remember the caution part of that cautious optimism. Another thing that weighs on, you know, so many investors' minds right now is this debt ceiling conversation, the harsh reality of a political environment that's as divided as it is that, you know, this is something that's entirely outside of our control. It's entirely sitting in the laps of politicians who have, at least for now, shown really no desire to come to some kind of agreement. Janet Yellen sent a letter to Congress on Monday essentially saying, hey, I thought it might be a little later this summer, but it looks like maybe June 1st is about as far as we're going to get being able to pay our bills. And so, you know, I think we're getting closer and closer to the day when Congress needs to act. And of course, the further we go, the closer we get to that, whatever that actual day is, the more volatility we're going to see added back to stocks short term, the more businesses and consumers now start to lose confidence in what the future looks like, because that all adds to the uncertainty. And so, you know, I want to remind investors that while we do have to think about those short-term consequences, the second part of this is that corporate America isn't the same as the federal government, that businesses are still going to be able to pay their debt June 2nd, if that's what this drop dead date is for the budget ceiling for the deficit. More importantly, they don't just stop selling iPhones if you're Apple, or software if you're Microsoft, or groceries if you're, you know, Kroger. they're still doing all that stuff because consumers have to buy that. Yeah, they don't have to buy as much as they bought before, and a crisis of confidence will certainly slow the rate that they're doing that, but it doesn't mean that the world falls apart tomorrow. And as long as consumers remain at least a little bit solvent, labor market pointing to the fact that, hey, there's enough capacity to spend out there, you don't worry that the long-term viability of corporate America is challenged, but it is going to be a challenge for a little while. And so, you know, I think one more thing right now that we're concerned about, one more thing that we look at and go, well, here's another reason why maybe I don't want to be pouring money into the stock market right now. Reminder that just as quickly as the problem comes up, we can solve it. It's only a vote. And out of the last 78 times we've been through this, that vote's come through in enough time to avert any major crisis. Doesn't mean that's what's going to happen this time, but of course I think fair to assume that until we hear otherwise, this will be something that sits out there. You know, I think the other thing that weighs on, you know, markets this week is what we talked about earlier, the Federal Reserve. Tom, the Fed raised rates a quarter of a point. As you look at kind of long-term expectations, the market is really signaling that the expectation for rates isn't much higher from here. And yet, you know, I think investors have a lot to think about as we continue to digest where do rates head, and as importantly, you know, kind of what's the plan?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, what I'm looking at right now, additionally to where rates are at, is just I think some of the other positive signs in the marketplace and with companies right now is that corporate profit margins have ticked up about 0.2% from 11.3% to 11.5%. Now, that might seem like a small amount, but in context, for the last quarter, it's on the backs of six consecutive quarters of corporate profit margin decline. And so I think the significance of something like that will tell you that that could be the bottoming out period. I mean, this could be the start of, you know, margins starting to, you know, resume growth again. You know, additionally, looking at earnings, you know, the earnings, we've seen a bit of resilience there as far as our earnings. I think we were anticipating, or the markets were anticipating or expecting, a 6.5% decline, and to only see a decline of about 1.5% is pretty significant as well. So I remain, you know, optimistic, you know, looking at the backdrop of everything happening, as well as, you know, with the markets, of course, paying attention to where interest rates are going and signaling. And although, you know, they are kind of expecting a decline by year end, or pricing in, I believe, 2 quarter-point declines, which, you know, in my view may be a bit optimistic, but nonetheless, you know, there's still reasons to be, you know, positive going forward with over the summer.
And Joel, we had some other economic news this week, maybe lost in some of the shuffle of the Fed and Secretary Yellen's letter to Congress and all the other conversations, but some important stuff in terms of kind of the way we view, you know, maybe the long-term trend for the economy. Anything in particular from kind of the releases this week stand out?
Sure. I mean, it's again, just with the painting with a broad brush, saying that the economy is slowing down. We had numbers on construction spending, and that's been going down, especially for residential. Year to year, residential construction spending is down 10%. We had numbers from the Institute for Supply Management on manufacturing, and that was showing the sixth month in a row of contraction. So, you know, both of those, construction and manufacturing, are places that might get hit more than others with higher interest rates, and it's reflected in how they're doing. But you look at that, and factory orders down for the fourth time in 5 months, with if you exclude transportation, which is a volatile category, and yeah, so we're seeing more of those signs that the economy is doing kind of what the Fed wanted it to do. But then the jobs numbers come up, and I don't know how surprised the Fed is by that, or if they're concerned at all. But, you know, that, as you said before, that might be one reason that they hang in there and keep raising rates, or not drop rates like Tom was saying.
Yeah, so Powell talked about the likelihood of soft landing being higher than recession. He talked about some glimmers of hope in his speech about the possibility for pause, at least not raising rates anymore. And so I think the market held on to some of that this week more than what they may otherwise have, given all the other news that was out there. I think I'm happy to come through the week without too much of a decline, especially after some of the gains we've seen in recent months. And so, you know, I think if anything, encouraged by where we are, encouraged that while there's some pretty serious stuff we still need to get through, there's some opportunity at the end of that that, you know, at least to me points to a smoother ride than what we've seen the last 18 months, a more sustainable set of returns coming from, you know, maybe higher exposures to bonds and fixed income like Kendall was talking about. And most importantly, you know, if Tom, as you were saying, we can count on some of these profit margin improvements and get beyond some of the current valuation and earnings issues, you know, I think I'm encouraged overall about where we're headed. It's just going to take us a little while to get there. With that, we enjoy doing the program for you. We'll talk to you again next week.
Thank you for listening to Money Talk with Bob Landis. If you have a financial question you want answered on next week's show, email it to moneytalk@landis.com. To keep informed throughout the week, visit our Money Talk page at landis.com.